All right, welcome to the deep dive. Today, we're going to be talking about something pretty cool.
Yeah, should be fun.
It combines this idea of like counting things combinatorics with these kind of hardcore analytical tools.
Okay.
We're going to be talking about Stieltjes moment sequences.
Ah, interesting.
And those might sound, kind of jargony.
Right.
But the basic idea is think about a sequence of numbers where each number is kind of like an average, like a moment of some underlying positive thing you're measuring.
Okay, so there's like a hidden shape to the data in a way.
Exactly. And these Stieltjes moment sequences, they kind of behave in nice, predictable ways. Like
Daddy?
they grow smoothly, and you can put limits on how fast they can increase, which is really helpful.
Interesting. So are we going to see how this plays out in a specific area of combinatorics?
Yeah, and this is where it gets really interesting because we're going to connect these Stieltjes moment sequences to this idea of pattern avoiding permutations.
Okay, that sounds cool.
We're looking at a paper from 2001 that goes deep into this connection, specifically looking at sequences that count permutations that avoid specific patterns, like they denote it as AVP, where P is the pattern.
Right, like if you're arranging things and you want to avoid having a certain order pop up.
Exactly. And if you've ever wondered, like, how does counting these arrangements relate to deeper math? This deep dive is for you.
That's a great way to put it.
Okay, so you know how in combinatorics, like we're often counting things, right? So you end up with a sequence of numbers, right? Like the number of ways to arrange letters, to draw paths, whatever it might
Right,
be.
you're enumerating possibilities.
Exactly. It turns out that some of these sequences are secretly like Stieltjes moment sequences.
Oh, wow.
And this paper really digs into that connection.
Makes sense.
And it specifically focuses on like permutations that are trying to avoid certain patterns.
Oh.
And so our goal is to kind of pull out the core ideas from this research so we can give you a good feel for like what's going on under the hood and how we can even think about these kind of discrete sequences using this idea of like continuous density functions, which is a really neat bridge.
Yeah, that connection between the discrete and continuous is always fascinating.
Absolutely.
So, where do we start with all this? Like, how do you even know if a sequence is a Stieltjes moment sequence?
Right, that's the first question, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, the classic way is to use something called Hankel matrices.
Go ahead.
So imagine you've got your sequence, right? Like A1, A2, and so on. And you make this grid.
Okay.
So the first row is just the sequence itself.
Right.
The second row, you kind of shift it over one. You start with A1, then A2, and so on.
Okay, I'm seeing the pattern. So each row is shifted one step.
Exactly. And you keep going infinitely.
Wow, an infinite grid. That's the Hankel matrix.
That's
Perfect.
it. That's the Hankel matrix.
All right. So what's so special about arranging the numbers like that?
A sequence is a Stieltjes moment sequence if and only if all the principal subdeterminants of this Hankel matrix are non-negative.
Whoa, okay, hold on. Break that down a bit.
Sure. So, principal subdeterminants, that just means you take like the top left corner of the matrix, calculate its determinant, then you make that corner a little bigger, calculate that determinant, and you keep doing that.
Okay, I get it. So you're looking at determinants of these growing squares from the top left corner.
Exactly. And if all of those determinants are either zero or positive, boom, you have yourself a Stieltjes moment sequence.
Wow, so this property of the matrix tells us something fundamental about the nature of the sequence.
Exactly. It's a well-established result that goes back to Stieltjes himself, and there's also some later work by Gantmacher and Crane that builds on it.
Interesting. So the non-negative determinants are the key indicator.
Yeah, it's this really cool connection between the values in the sequence and this special property of the matrix.
That's amazing. So you could theoretically take any combinatorial sequence, build this Hankel matrix, and check these determinants. Although an infinite matrix seems a bit tricky to work with in practice.
Right, it could get computationally crazy, especially if your sequence goes on forever.
Yeah. But usually in combinatorics, we use generating functions, right? Those power series where the coefficients are the terms of the sequence.
Exactly. And there are these deep connections between the properties of the generating function and these Hankel determinants.
So it's like you can study the sequence indirectly through its generating function.
Right. And later on, we'll talk about something called the Stieltjes inversion formula, which is like a key tool to connect these two perspectives.
Looking forward to that. But before we get there, the paper points out something really neat about how simple transformations you might do to a combinatorial sequence.
Okay, yeah.
They actually correspond to specific operations on the density function, if it has one.
Ah, yes. I remember seeing that in the paper Figure 1. It was like a translation guide between the world of sequences and the world of continuous functions.
Exactly. It's one of the coolest parts of this theory.
So if you have a combinatorial sequence, like any, right, and it has this underlying density function, occ x, and you do some simple operation to the sequence, there's a matching operation you can do to the density function.
Okay, I'm intrigued. Give me an example.
Okay, so like imagine you shift the sequence back. You create a new sequence, bn, where bn is just the previous term, an1.
Okay, so you're just shifting the index by one.
Right. Well, the density function for that new sequence, let's call it x, it's connected to the original density by this formula involving x and 0 divided by x, as long as some technical conditions hold.
So shifting the index of the sequence affects the shape of the density function in a specific way.
Precisely. It's like the transformation on the sequence is mirrored in the continuous world.
That makes a lot of sense. What other kinds of transformations do they talk to?
They've got a whole bunch, like taking differences between consecutive terms in the sequence, that matches up with multiplying the density by 1xr if the underlying measure is on that 0, 1 interval. And there's stuff like operations that are kind of like differentiation and integration on the sequence.
Analogs of calculus operating.
Exactly. And those have matching counterparts on the density function, sometimes literally involving derivatives and integrals.
Wow, that's elegant.
It is. And even like combining two sequences, either by adding them term by term or doing this thing called multiplicative convolution, it has an equivalent on the density side too.
So there's this beautiful correspondence between operations in both worlds.
Right. Addition for the sum of sequences and this kind of more complicated integral convolution for the product.
It makes sense.
And they also talk about dilation, which is like stretching or compressing the sequence. That corresponds to scaling the variable in the density function.
So if you understand how these transformations work on density functions, you can predict what will happen to the combinatorial sequence and vice versa.
Exactly. It's super powerful.
It's like having two different languages to talk about the same thing.
Yeah. And that brings us to this really cool tool they talk about, the Steelches inversion formula.
Okay, yeah, they make a big deal about that
Yeah.
version formula. So that means we're going backwards somehow.
Right.
Okay.
Exactly. It's like the key to unlocking the underlying density function if you only know the generating function of that.
Right. Because usually you have the sequence, then you get the generating function.
Yeah.
But this lets you go the other way.
Exactly.
Cool. So
Like,
how does it actually work?
well, the formula itself uses a contour integral in the complex plane, which can sound kind of scary,
A little bit, yeah.
but the paper explains it in a more intuitive way, like how the generating function behaves as you get close to a point on the positive real axis, approaching it from above and below.
Okay.
And the difference in those limiting values is directly connected to the value of the density function at that point.
So you're sneaking up on the real axis from the complex plane to get the density.
Yeah.
That's pretty slick.
Yeah, it's this clever way of extracting the continuous density from the behavior of this discrete generating function.
Really cool connection. So they use this to actually work with specific sequences.
Oh, yeah. They give some great examples, starting with, the classic Catalan
Oh,
numbers.
yes, those old friends.
They show that Catalan numbers, they are a Steelges moment sequence.
Makes sense. They pop up everywhere.
Right. And they mention that the growth rate is 4,
Okay.
which kind of hints that the density function, the range of x values where it's non-zero, is probably going to be between 0 and 4.
That makes sense.
Yeah. So just for anyone listening who might not be like totally familiar with Catalan numbers, they show up in all sorts of counting problems, from balanced parentheses to like binary
Yeah.
trees.
Right. They're fundamental.
And the paper gives the generating function for the Catalan numbers. It's this nice formula with a square root.
Okay.
And then they use that Steelges inversion formula that we just talked about.
Uh-huh.
And they show that the density function has this really elegant form, like 1 over 2 pi times the square root of 4 minus x over
Oh,
x.
wow. So it's actually quite a concrete density function.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
That's really cool.
And they point out that even if you couldn't get like a nice closed form solution for the generating function, there are still techniques that can help you find an equation that the density satisfies.
Okay.
They mentioned something called resultant computation. It's a bit more advanced,
Right.
but it's a more general method that can be applied even when you can't just like directly solve the generating function.
That makes sense. There are always trade-offs.
Yeah. So then they bring up another sequence, the Motzkin numbers, just to show a contrast.
Ah, yes, the Motzkin numbers.
You know, those count the paths that can go up, down, or stay level.
Right. Classic lattice path problem.
Exactly. So the question is, how do these fit into our, like, Stieltjes moment sequence world?
Yeah. Are they one or not?
Well, the paper explains that Motzkin numbers are what's called a hamburger moment sequence.
Okay.
But they're not a Stieltjes moment sequence.
Oh, so there's a subtle distinction there. What's the key difference?
So it all comes down to, like, where the underlying measurement that's creating the moments can live.
Okay.
For Stieltjes, it's got to be non-negative, so zero to infinity.
Right.
But for hamburger, it can be anything on the real line, negative to positive.
Ah, I see. So Stieltjes is more restricted.
Yeah.
Got it.
And the paper explains that if you look at the determinants of the Hankel matrix for the Motzkin numbers, they kind of have this periodic behavior. They repeat every six steps.
Okay.
And that tells you it can't be a Stieltjes moment sequence.
Interesting.
They also mention its connection to something called Jacobi continued fractions, which are linked to hamburger moment sequences, as opposed to Stieltjes continued fractions, which are the ones associated with Stieltjes moment sequences.
So the type of continued fraction also gives you a clue. Cool. So now they get to the heart of the paper, the pattern avoiding permutations.
Yes. And they start with this kind of overarching statement.
Okay.
That these sequences, denoted A of 12K, those that count permutations avoiding an increasing subsequence of length, are Stieltjes moment sequences.
So that's their starting point for the whole investigation.
It is. And then they dive into specific examples. They look at A of 1342. First.
Okay.
And they give the density function for that. It's this formula involving like an eighth power and some square roots.
That's complicated.
It's a little bit messy, but the support, the range of x values where it's non-zero is from 0 to 8.
Okay.
And what's really cool is they actually compared this exact density function that they got from the theory to one they constructed numerically just by using the coefficients of the AVA 1442 sequence as moments.
Oh, wow.
And when they plotted them, they were basically identical.
That's amazing.
It's like this visual confirmation that the theory really works.
So satisfying.
And then they talk about AVE 1234, those permutations avoiding an increasing sequence of length 4.
Okay.
And they mention that its generating function and the density function are a bit more complicated. They involve something called hypergeometric functions, specifically the 2F1 hypergeometric function.
So a step up in complexity.
Yeah, compared to the Catalan numbers, which were like just algebraic.
Right.
And then, of course, you start thinking, okay, what happens when the pattern gets even longer, like AVE 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 and AVE 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6?
Does it get even crazier?
Oh, it does. And this is where things get really interesting because they find these surprising connections to something that seems completely different.
Okay, I'm on the edge of my seat.
They find that the density function for AVE 1, 12, 3, 4, 5 is related to the density function that describes the distance traveled in 4 steps by a uniform random walk in the plane.
Whoa, random walks.
Yeah, it's wild. And they say that their linear differential operators, the ones that describe these functions, are gauge equivalent, which basically means that these two seemingly different things behave in a fundamentally similar way under certain transformations.
That's really unexpected.
Yeah.
What's the intuition there? Why would counting permutations that avoid a pattern have anything to do with how a random particle moves?
It's a great question, and it's one of the big mysteries in this area.
Uh-huh.
This gauge equivalence suggests that there's some deeper structural similarity in the math behind these two things, even though on the surface they seem completely unrelated.
So there might be a hidden universality.
Exactly. Yeah. It's mind-blowing. And the same thing happens with AVE 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Really? So this connection to random walks is a recurring theme.
It is. They find that the density function for AVE 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 is also linked to the density of a 5-step random walk through this gauge equivalence. It's like a pattern within a pattern.
That's amazing.
So it seems like for increasing patterns, AVE 12, you know, K plus 1, there's this consistent thing going on. They're all Stieltjes moment sequences. And as the pattern gets longer, these surprising connections to random walks emerge.
Very cool.
The paper also mentions that the support of the measure for these sequences is always between 0 and k squared.
Okay.
And their generating functions are what's called definite, which means they satisfy these nice linear differential equations.
Right. Makes them easier to work with in some ways.
Yeah. And they can also be expressed as diagonals of rational functions.
So there's a lot of shared structure in these sequences.
There is. And they go even deeper into the properties of the linear differential operators associated with these sequences, talking about how they're homomorphic to their adjoints and relate to symmetric powers of simpler operators.
Okay. So for increasing patterns, things are looking pretty nice structurally. Hmm. But then they bring up AVE-32-2T4.
Ah, yeah, the outlier.
Yeah, the one they call the most difficult to deal with. Why is that?
Well, the main reason is that no one's been able to find a closed form for its generating function.
Really? Still?
Yeah, it's this big unsolved problem. So all the analysis they can do for this one is numerical, based on actually counting a whole bunch of permutations and seeing what patterns emerge.
Wow, so all that elegant machinery from before doesn't quite apply here.
Not in the same way.
So the specific pattern you're trying to avoid really matters.
Absolutely. It has a huge impact on the complexity.
Fascinating. So to wrap up, the paper goes into some general properties of these differential operators.
Yeah, they summarize some of the key things they observed.
What are the main takeaways there?
Well, they point out that the differential operators that kind of annihilate that means give zero when applied to the generating functions of IVE 12K sequences often have this special form.
Okay.
They're often a combination of a simple first order operator, which has a straightforward rational solution, and another operator that's like homomorphic to its adjoint, which is a kind of mirror image in a way. And the density function is connected to a transformation of the second operator, but finding its exact form can be really tricky, especially when you don't have a closed form generating function.
Right, it gets messy.
Yeah.
So overall, it seems like the big idea here is that a lot of these combinatorial sequences, especially those counting permutations that avoid increasing patterns, have this hidden structure of Stieltjes moment sequences.
That's exactly it. And this allows us to bring in all these powerful tools from analysis to study them, like finding their density functions.
And along the way, you discover these amazing connections to other parts of math, like the random walks.
Right. It really highlights that math is this interconnected web of ideas.
Absolutely. It makes you wonder if there are even deeper, more fundamental principles at play.
It does make you think.
So for our listeners out there, here's something to ponder. Could these gauge equivalences between pattern-avoiding permutations and random walks be hints of something even more universal, connecting the world of combinatorics to probability in ways we don't fully understand yet? It's a question worth exploring.
That's a great thought to leave everyone with. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.